You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Chris, for those that haven't come across you online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name's Chris Ray. I'm the head of pharmacy with a product called BioLite. What we're going to be talking about is some of the opportunities and challenges of taking a new and innovative product and getting it out into independent pharmacies.
In the company BioLite, you're the head of pharmacy. I'm thinking that means more in the sales terms and not so much in the research areas.
Right. I'm going to be working with our independent pharmacy segment and trying to teach them the ways to apply this in a clinical manner and connect it with their patients at the stores.
You just got back from a national wholesale meeting.
Right. Yes. I was actually at McKesson Idea Share, and I'm going to be on the road tomorrow going to Cardinal Show and Amerisources Show the following week. So it's going to be July full of ideas and people networking and just trying to find what the latest practices and opportunities are in independent pharmacy.
Do you like those shows?
I love them. I love them. And we're a fun product. People are curious about us. You know, everybody's coming by because they had a late night the night before, possibly, or, you know, a lot of these shows are out in the heat. So it's definitely a good opportunity for us to kind of get our name out there and meet with stores and some of the other stakeholders in the business.
When you see those weeks coming up on your calendar, we haven't done them for a couple of years, but when you see those weeks, is it something that you get excited for, or you say that's going to make my life a little more tricky, or is it just kind of neutral?
No, it's definitely something that I've been antsy and excited about getting back into, just because we don't have a huge consumer marketing budget. We're a family-owned company like these pharmacies, and it's a very innovative product. So it gives me the opportunity to get in front of people when they're not stressed out behind their counter, so they can actually absorb what I'm saying and really hear about the creative ways that they can apply it in their businesses.
It seems like your product would be very apropos for those kind of shows, you know, because I'm imagining you give maybe a sample.
Oh, most definitely. We gave away 108 cases at McKesson Show. So that's over 1,500 bottles of bio.
That's a cool thing you can do, especially in the heat. Those functions are basically built for you.
The food and beverage guy saw me pushing around my cart to get ice, and he tried to kick us out of the resort because he said, hey, there's no drinks here. And I had to spend about 5-10 minutes explaining to him that this is a liquid supplement that we're trying to get the pharmacies to use in the stores and not something that we're trying to give away or cut into their beverage sales. So a lot of it's education.
You're like the seeing eye dog of beverages. You know, it's like, no, we've got to be here. We're medical.
Right, right.
What kind of press back would you get in a independent pharmacy? What kind of attitude would you get there versus how you mentioned people are a little bit more laid back at the shows? What is the difference in your mind? And I think sometimes as pharmacists, sometimes we don't even know the beasts that we become in a store. So
yes.
What are some of those differences in the same person, even different personalities you see in the store versus a show?
Yes, Mike. So I've been on the road the last year and a half going around and leaving samples at independent pharmacies. I think I've seen about 2,500 just walking in the door, and I've seen all sorts of stores, all sorts of owners. But, you know, obviously when you're in your day-to-day, you have 10 things on your mind. You have pharmacy techs trying to get your attention. You have just a very, you know, reactive mindset. So when somebody walks through the door, they might have, a great idea, a great product, but you're not as receptive to hear about how that product can be utilized because you're dealing with your stress in that moment. That's why these shows, you know, gives people an opportunity to look at the bigger picture and maybe be a little bit more open-minded to some solutions.
Your product, BioLite, is kind of IV in a bottle of electrolytes and things like that. If you could only pick one method when you go into an independent pharmacy? What's your method?
Since I've been in so many, I've gotten my little elevator pitch down pretty well. So I say we have three segments that you can attach this to that are your customers. From a clinical perspective, this is good from everything from oncology and hospice all the way down to stomach bugs. Then what I call the active workers, active occupancy, that's people working outside in the heat, farmers, landscaping crews, contractors, factory workers, and then sports and leisure. So a lot of pharmacies are connecting this to their high school football teams, runners, and then leisure, you know, people having a good time and dealing with the hangovers the next day. We call it overindulgence, though.
Overindulgence.
We make it sound a little bit prettier.
Yeah, that's good, especially for all those drug reps from the wholesalers. We know that they like to do their thing when they're far away from their regular routes. I'm just joking.
Well, you know, and me being one, I understand what they go through. So I've given them plenty of samples to try to get them to give them to their stores. And I think that we have the most hydrated wholesale workforce in the nation now. So,
speaking of that, then, you came from McKesson as can we call it a rep? Is that derogatory?
No.
You were a rep that visited stores for the general McKesson pharmacy stuff.
Right. So I did that for a decade with independent pharmacy, and I consider myself a bartender about 20% of the time and a personal trainer about 80% of the time. So, you know, let's hear about what's going on. You know, let's deal with some of the complaints and get it off your shoulder. Now let's see what we can do to control the controllables and implement some of the best practices in the industry so we can make sure that you're sustainable moving forward.
I saw my wife that last week. You were out to dinner somewhere. The waitress came up and she said, I could do that. And I'm like, you'd want to be a waitress? She said, no, I'd be a bartender. And I said, well, I'm a bartender. And that's kind of as far as that went. I like that though. 20% bartender, 80% personal trainer.
I think that, you know, this is such a complicated industry that, you know, pharmacy owners obviously have a lot of things outside of their control, and they want to be able to speak to people that know the jargon and know what's going on. And that's really important to be able to authentically empathize with, you know, people in that position, but then gain their trust and really, you know, help them make better decisions, not from a ego standpoint, but from a, well, I've done the research. I've seen a lot in the industry. I've seen a lot of people do this well and some people not do it well.
Were you responsible to get new business when you were at McKesson, or was it mainly servicing clients that you already had?
No, definitely that new business was a huge priority. You know, obviously you're taking care of your stores and your territory, and try to make sure that if there's any opportunities out there, you try to develop relationships and always see if you can transition them over to your side.
I tell my team this. I imagine that being a strong number two is a really good spot to be, to get stores as a strong number two, because the timing has to be right to become their number one, assuming they're already full-fledged business. But I think a lot of people too quickly give up on wanting to be at a strong number two. You want to be that next person in their figurative Rolodex when the number one pisses them off.
Oh yeah, definitely. No, my approach is never to be aggressive or really even talk about that transition. Maybe for the first 6 months, it was, you know, really to show value every time I walked through that door and bring information and be a true advocate and a consultant. So if that opportunity ever arised, you know, they would think about me and see that there was mutual respect there. And it probably was more of a long-term game. And I had friends, really close friends that never even worked with me at McKesson, but I was, you know, I was always available to help them and try to bring value. And that's what led me to BioLite. Is BioLite was a product that I ran into in the market, visiting a pharmacy when they were a brand new company, loved the story, tried the product, and thought that every independent pharmacy in the nation should carry it. So I took it into my stores and said, hey, this is one of several items that, you know, it's not carried at most retailers. It is the Swiss Army knife of front end, and it can be a great addition to the store. And it really took off. And that helped me with the decision to transition when the CEO and the founder kept consistently asking me, hey, when you ever get done with corporate world, we would love to work with you.
Were there other reasons why it was a good time to jump? Negative reasons?
Well, I think that there are definitely some stressors that a lot of people in this industry don't see that, you know, some of these representatives have, especially if they really care about their customers and what's going on. And, you know, I was probably losing a lot of sleep at night, you know, worrying on vacations that things were getting taken care of. So, you know, definitely it was something that I thought, hey, maybe I need a new challenge. And I know that BioLite's going to turn into something amazing. And just the opportunity to grow it and the family that's behind it, I really respected. So it's been such a wonderful transition for me, and it's been a blessing. It's given me the opportunity actually to spend some time with my dad. He's been going out with me on the road. He's my wheel man when I'm going in and leaving samples. So I'm sure one day I'm going to look back on that time and say, hey, that was an amazing time to be able to spend with my dad.
Here's the two companies I'd like to have, Chris. One, either a company where you have to grow, because that's kind of cool. That's an inner goal kind of thing. Another company I wouldn't mind doing is coming in as like a rescuer. You know, you come into a business that either just went bankrupt or whatever. And I know it's harder than I'm thinking here, but then it's already failed. And if you fail, it's like, well, you know, that's all I could do. I think some of the hardest businesses are the ones that, and unfortunately, pharmacies in this world, a lot of the independent pharmacists on there, where it's just a steady decline. It'd almost be nicer if the world of pharmacy made us walk the plank right away and get it over with. But some people have been in a steady decline for the last 20 years.
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of the owners, they would tell me, look, Chris, I'm a great pharmacist. I care about my community, care about, you know, the people that work for me, but I didn't learn anything in business school about all of this. So I'm having to, you know, do this as I go. It's scary. I need the help. And what I would, you know, found is, hey, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you could be a good pharmacist. You could be good with your community, and the margin was there. So everything was taken care of. Now with all the reimbursement pressures and things that they're dealing with, that's not the case. You have to look for operational efficiencies. You have to really know your P&L and work with partners that are strong in the field. And that's really where people like me and you add value.
When I think of where you have come from with thousands of products, which is interesting, but there's thousands of products you had to have, different sizes and, you know, of all these OTCs and RX products. And then when you go to one product, basically, I know you have different flavors and things, but you go to one product. Was that a relief? Is that boring? Do you wish there was something different? Or is it kind of nice to have one product that you're able to do your marketing and sales, yet not worry about the minutia of the thousand different manufacturers and NDC numbers and things like that?
Well, I think, you know, it's been a really joy to be able to be creative with that one product. I think most people would look at it myopically and say, yeah, you're that same pitch over and over again. What I see is, well, here's an opportunity to teach pharmacies how to connect a product where the sky's the limit and utilize it to drive relationships in the community. So what I'm doing is I'm teaching pharmacies how to go to long-term care facilities and tell them how to help with wound care through hydration or UTIs or fall risk. I'm helping stores go to urgent cares or hospice companies, discharge planners at the hospital, gastro docs. So it's a way to, you know, continue to coach pharmacies on how to think outside the box to drive relationships and prescription volume back into their store.
The freedom and your expression comes from innovative relationships and innovative paths of marketing and so on versus the energy spent worrying about if the 1,000 SKUs behind you are going to fulfill their mission after you already went and stuck your neck out for them.
Right. That's, you know, there's a lot more controllables in my life now. And the red tape has kind of been taken away. I went from a company that had, you know, 80,000 employees and $200 billion in revenue to I was the fifth person on the BioLite team. So it was a night and day difference from that bureaucracy standpoint. And it's just been such a fun change to where, you know, I can use some of my creativity and really be involved in the strategy day to day, as opposed to, you know, just a boot on the ground. And I really do miss the value that I added as a wholesale rep, you know, and the relationships, the strong relationships. But it's really, this has allowed me to broaden my network and meet, I'm not the bad guy, the enemy, the competitor anymore. I'm developing relationships with the other wholesalers, buying groups, stores outside of East Tennessee and North Carolina. And it's been just a relief to really, you know, broaden my network through BioLite.
You really now can become almost everybody's friend. When you're at a meeting with the wholesalers, sometimes they, I don't know if they do, but they can kind of badmouth the little people of the customers, you know? And then if you're in the pharmacy side, you know, the pharmacists are badmouthing, you know, the wholesalers, or at least I was. but being this, you pretty much are everybody's best friend until Gatorade or someone tries to do something medical.
Right. So, you know, the analogy I used with my wife there then is, I said, I feel like I'm the kid of two divorcing parents. You know, McKesson say, go tell your mom that, you know, I think this about her. And then, you know, you go and then the store's back. Well, you go tell your dad that you, so you became like this ping pong that you're constantly getting whacked. And, I get complained to a lot less about electrolytes than I do cost of goods and DIR yeah. fees and effective rates and all this, that other stuff.
When you mentioned you would lose sleep over something as a wholesale rep, what kind of things would gnaw on you at night?
Well, yeah, sometimes I got very into the weeds of everything and looking at, you know, PSAO contracting versus what I know they were buying at and trying to make sure the numbers lined up, and sometimes saying, well, that doesn't really line up for a sustainable margin. That would definitely, you know, throw me off a little bit. Or understanding the challenges of cash flow when people are waiting on rebates, but their drug bill's coming up. Understanding that, you know, hey, I just got 3 hospice people at the end of the month, but now I'm over my threshold, and you're saying you're not going to ship medicine that those people need, and they're you know, sitting at home with cancer. So those are the type of things that if you're an empath like me, that it really gets to you, because you want to make sure that everybody's taken care of and that the stores feel like you're going to bat for them.
You're the black and white of whether this person's going to get cared for. And that just gets easier for your boss and your boss's boss and your boss's boss's boss.
When you're in a big organization like that, you know, sometimes it's not easy to just, you know, use common sense at times, because there's processes in place and they're there for a reason.
Your secret solution. I don't even know if it's secret. Is this like Colonel Sanders? Is this secret or is it secret, or are there numbers on the bottle?
Yeah, there's definitely numbers. What Dr. Rollins really tried to do is replicate the IV bag from a formula standpoint. And now he added some extra potassium to it, because intravenous potassium messes with heart rhythm. So with the oral rehydration solution, he could add the extra potassium and, you know, the milk thistle, ginger root, all that is on the bottle.
It seems to me that this is not a hard sell. In other words, it's like when I think about it, I'm like, oh, I know people need this stuff. I know Gatorade is a bunch of sugar. I know they're sugar-free and stuff, but my quick thoughts go to sugar Kool-Aid-ish. There seems like there'd be a place in the middle that is obviously helpful, and it seems like you have a nice hole in the market to jump in there. If you're in a bunch of chiropractic offices, and God bless chiropractors, but some of them are wacky, and some pharmacists are wacky. But if you're in there, you know, this drink is going to cure your stub toe, you know, that kind of stuff. But yours seems to be kind of like an easy sell. It's like we fall right into that market.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And I go in there with the impression, hey, every pharmacy should be stocking this. It's a little bit more difficult than that. I think a lot of the stores are very cynical and think it's just a marketing gimmick. So it takes me really trying to show them all the ways they can apply it and saying, hey, I'm going to leave you some. I want you to try this when you need it. The best example is there's a store in Douglas, Georgia. He was cynical for about 6 months of the year, and he finally tried it, thought it worked, and he started telling his farmers about it in his community, started giving it to the high school wrestlers and a couple of the doctors there in town. And he's sold 7,000 cases of this stuff now.
You mentioned going into the pharmacies, you know, and some of them are hesitant. Do they balk at the price? Do they balk at how they're going to have to sell it? What are like the top three, and not necessarily focused on your product, but what are the top three issues you might come with a product or a product like yours?
Well, a lot of us, we want an easy button, a golden bullet, right? That's going to fix our business. And a lot of the stores, they see, hey, this is a 40% margin product, but it's a drink. It's not going to mitigate your DIR fees. You're going to need a dozen of these products or a dozen of these ideas to add up to really make the difference in your business. So it's not going to be a golden bullet to fix things. I think that a lot of the stores, I have to explain, hey, it's a functional beverage. It's not going to taste like Gatorade. It's not going to be sweet. It's salty. It's got a lot of electrolytes. So some of the folks, they balk at the taste a little bit, but I have to explain to them, hey, you know, broccoli doesn't taste great, but it's good for you. And I would say the taste and it being, you know, from a margin perspective, a margin dollar perspective, those are the two biggest concerns.
Some of us pharmacies have been slapped around so much, it's hard to see anything really helping all that much sometimes, but it probably got taken from us incrementally. And well, I think you could argue DIR fees weren't incremental. That was just like a cliff. But in general, in business, things get taken gradually. And so you got to try to be better than you were yesterday.
Yeah, I think pharmacies definitely, it's been years of the frog in the boiling pot. And every year it gets a little bit harder and harder. And I understand why, you know, there's so much anger about, because there's a lot of things that are not controllable. It's a very complex industry. You know, in most small businesses, A plus B equals C. You buy at this, you sell at this, you give good service. And you know, if you have a good product or service, you're going to be successful. You know, pharmacy is not that way. You have so many different factors that you're dealing with. And, you know, really from a partner's perspective, I've always wanted to help them by doing the research that they don't have time to do and making sure they know what strong operators are doing in the field. And that's just the value I'm trying to add.
You mentioned the taste of this thing. I just read something the other day about Listerine. You know, Listerine mouthwash. It tastes like you're gargling like gasoline or something. It's just terrible. But that was its calling card because it tasted crappy. I think that was their tagline. You know, it tastes bad, so your germs, I forget what it was, but it's something along those lines. They kind of made a thing out of it. But that's your thing. If your thing doesn't taste a little bit bitter or off, you know, not the sweetness of these other ones, people are like, that's just Gatorade with a new label on it, basically.
Yeah, so this is going to be salty. And, you know, some people don't have a affinity for salt or sweet tooth, so I try to go into it explaining this is packed full of electrolytes. So that's why you're tasting that salty taste. But what I see is usually people will love one flavor, tolerate two, and hate one flavor. And it's all over the board. So when people say, what's going to be my favorite? What's your favorite? And we might get 10 people and they're all going to have a different lineup of what they like and don't like. And that's what I try to explain to folks is, you know, get them cold and you'll find one that you really, really enjoy. And there's going to be one that you're going to want to just throw out the back door.
We talk about salty. Have you seen that trend? There's two trends going around now with coffee. One is putting like a half a stick of butter in your coffee and twirling it up. That's one. I think it's for these people fasting. It's like the magic bullet or something like that. And the other one is people put salt into their coffee. They just salt it. It's like bitter coffee. Have you heard of both of those?
The first one, yes, I've done that. The Bulletproof Coffee, that's Dave Asprey. I love the functional health fields.
What'd you say, Dave Asprey?
Dave Asprey is the guy that started that, and it's called Bulletproof Coffee. So yeah, either butter or coconut oil, some type of MCT oil. It definitely helps, balance out your blood sugar in the morning if you're fasting.
Why don't they just do like a hamburger? I mean, you're taking a stick of butter. How did he, in quote, sell that to the world, that theory?
I think, trying to explain that not all fats are created equal, saturated fat versus, monounsaturated fats.
And that's butter from a cow, all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Did you like it?
Oh, I loved it. It tastes kind of creamy. I don't like cream or sugar in my coffee. So just coconut oil and black coffee, fantastic. The salt and coffee, I think that's insane.
No, wait a minute, Chris. I'm going to disagree with you. You loved it. Then let me ask this. Are you still drinking it?
No, I should be.
That means you didn't love it. You tolerated it because you were starving and it was something to hold on to. Did you love it only because you were starving?
I think it was, I think I cycle in my healthy eating based on my stress levels. So when I'm very, very cognizant of what I'm doing, I'll try those type of things, like eating sardines for breakfast.
But sometimes you're just mindlessly putting a third bowl of Honey Bunches of Oats down your mouth kind of thing.
Almost definitely. Being on the road as much as I am, that the healthy eating goes out the window. If you've seen 40 pharmacies in a week, you're probably like ready to, okay, I'm on the road. We're in New Orleans. We're going to go out and eat some Creole with a lot of fat. And, it's going to be a good time.
All right. So jump to the salt in the coffee. Have you heard of that one?
I haven't. That sounds very, very weird to me.
And I've got a friend that won't eat watermelon without salt on it.
So we play off of that. One of our flavors is melon. And that's what we were going for, that watermelon cantaloupe salt combo.
Because you've heard that people put salt on that?
Oh yeah, I'm here in the South. We're in East Tennessee and come out from Georgia, so that is a huge Southern thing.
The one that I kind of invented as a kid, you remember Orange Julius in the malls? You ever hear of that?
Oh yeah.
I've always enjoyed putting orange juice with ice cream. Have you done that before?
I've never done that.
It makes like this beautiful, thicker Orange Julius. It kind of tastes like it, but a little bit different. I'm thinking that might be your next flavor, orange juice and vanilla ice cream. Mark that one down.
Nice. Yeah, that I want us to do a contest where everybody can kind of vote on what kind of crazy flavor they want to see. Lay's potato chips did that, and it was always a cool campaign.
You're like the Ben and Jerry's of electrolyte stuff.
We actually tried a mint flavor just to sample it, and it was like that mouthwash. It was the worst thing I've ever tasted, and thank God we didn't pull the trigger on that one.
Mint's a funny one because there's too many things that have tasted like mint that are not food. I mean, there is mint food, but of course, mint chocolate chip ice cream is good. I haven't tried that with orange juice yet, but that's a possible one there too. How many flavors do you guys have?
Right now we have four. We're working on a fifth and a powder form. We get asked a lot about why we don't have a powder form yet. It's because we want to keep the same formulation. This drink is equal to three of those powdered sticks that, you see. So, and also the nausea and the liver support. So we want to make sure that we're not jeopardizing the formulation that we made. So the chemists are working on that.
If I'm running your business, I kind of like the four flavors because part of the problem we got, like when we would have, and I know pharmacists can appreciate this, like when we had stockings, I'm not going to name the company, but we had stockings and there was like 100 different styles. Some had compression stockings, some had toes, some were open, different colors, black and tan and all this stuff. And then when you were out of one of them, you felt incomplete, like you didn't have everything, but then you had to have a $300 minimum order or something like that. And there's some things that almost didn't seem fair that there were so many damn types of it. And then, you felt the salespeople were, if they can get you into a new flavor, they can up things 20% as far as their numbers and stuff. So I like the four or five flavors right now.
Yeah, I agree. Keep it simple, stupid. If it works, that's what you want. dealing with stores, a lot of times it's at McKesson, they'd be like, hey, we need the grape version of that Tylenol syrup, because I had one person come in and ask for it, and I would get the grape flavor added for them, and then that person would never get back, and that would just sit and expire on the shelf, you know. So I think when you give people too many decisions to make, it's overwhelming, and it just goes by the wayside, and you have dead product on the shelf.
As I think back to some products that we had in the store, and I'm thinking of like this hand cream that we had, and we used to order some maybe tape from some person. There's maybe a few products like that. They were very low key. They'd come in and check the order. They'd have their little pad and say, hey, we're going to order this many of this. Is that okay? It's like, sure. You know, you come in once a month, we'll get a dozen more of this and this and that. And what I realize is, they were good products. We sold them. The sales guy was not overbearing. But then I look now sometimes and I'm like, we don't have that product anymore. If I'm looking at it from a sales standpoint, it's like, you mean the pharmacy's only going to sell this if they see my face, and they're not going to order it on their own if I don't come in here and keep pressing it? And we benefited from selling it. If I would order a dozen every month from the wholesaler, we'd benefit from it. I don't need to see that sales rep, but it was just kind of sad. I can't think of a better word, that things die out just because that face wasn't there.
Sure. Out of sight, out of mind, right? It's very relationship driven in this business. You have so many, you know, competing things for your mental space.
It's not a competing product. It's just a competing attention.
Right. Right. So, and yeah, I think that's probably one of our biggest challenges as we grow. You know, right now we're in about 2,500 independent pharmacies, and there's obviously limited bandwidth with me being the one person right now. So we have stores that really, really get behind it. Their staff gets behind it, and they love it. It's a fun brand, fun story with the family and the reason it was created. But, you know, if it goes out of stock at the wholesaler and you go to a week or two not ordering it, out of sight, out of mind.
As far as the company goes, I'm assuming this stuff isn't made in China, but it's maybe not made at your shop. Do you have an outside source that makes it? And then how does that get distributed and so on?
Right. So everything is made in Dallas, Texas. And we have a warehouse in Atlanta, Georgia. Like I said, they started in their garage, and we grew into a warehouse in Canton. And we just recently moved to a 30,000 square foot warehouse in Marietta that we're hoping to grow out of in a couple years.
And where's Marietta?
Atlanta.
Gotcha. Yeah.
The family is based there in Atlanta. We actually won an award that we are the fifth fastest growing company in Georgia. The University of Georgia gives out awards like that. So it's been a lot of fun watching it grow, and we're hoping that it's a product that continues to help people feel better, whether it be, you know, someone dealing with breast cancer, or somebody that's a weekend warrior that runs marathons.
How does that work out then with the decision to distribute it and so on, or made, I guess, down in Texas?
The family owns it 100%, have it taken the first bit of investment or loan. So they partner with a packager in Dallas that essentially we gave the formula to, and they started, you know, packaging it. And now we're just trying to increase our distribution nationally. So we'll start having a couple warehouses in other regions and working with, you know, obviously the pharmacy wholesalers and some beverage distributors to make sure that, you know, we're able to get it in other areas.
So right now it comes from Texas, and then it ends up at your main distribution house in Georgia?
Yes. Yeah, it does.
When the wholesalers have it, it'll go to the wholesalers, or will you guys kind of drop ship it from your stuff and the wholesalers just do the paperwork?
No. So that's been the biggest challenge so far in my time at BioLite, is getting the wholesalers to, you know, stock the product. And that's going to be the thing that now that it's stocked everywhere when we're going to these shows, I hope that it really helps us get into more pharmacies and really explode. But yeah, people can buy it direct from us, and everybody asks, hey, do you sell this direct? But because of the weight and size of the product, the minimum order from us is 8 cases. And I'm telling you, psychologically, these pharmacies feel like this is going to sit in the back room for 5 years and gather dust. Even if I tell them, hey, the average store does about 10, 12 cases a month, it's just something they don't want to set up another account. Usually, so having that wholesale partner, getting it next day, one case at a time, if they need it, it's really, really a good partnership.
How does that work if somebody would order 8 cases? And I understand why they wouldn't want to. Would you guys send that out UPS or something? Or
Right. So it's definitely a challenge. But we've gotten to the point where we have pharmacies that buy it by the pallet now every month. Right? And they stick it in the corner of the store and put it on Facebook. Hey, we got our shipment in. Come get it. And that's just been real neat to see. But yeah, I think the biggest challenge so far is the distribution of it.
How do pallets go? That's not UPS still, is it?
No. Once it gets to a pallet, then we use those third-party logistics companies. But it's been such a challenge with the wholesalers to explain to them that people will buy this in large quantities because they didn't want to commit to those pallet quantities as minimum orders. And I would say that has been the one thing that's held us back at this point, is trying to work through the wholesalers' ordering philosophies. Even when I show them data from a different wholesaler, it's definitely still a challenge. And they think that, hey, this is going to go out of stock. This is an OTC item, and we're not going to commit to this. It's been a lot of asking for favors, networking, working with stores to really, hey, please push the inventory folks to get this stuff in.
I ain't no genius, Chris, but it seems like for the wholesaler, I know that sometimes people at the pharmacy, they'll come in, hey, we'll put a dozen in here on consignment. And, you know, if you sell it, you pay us. I mean, does that fly with the wholesaler to say, we'll give you X pallets and don't worry about expiring because we'll take it back? Or is it just the space they don't want to deal with?
No, I think that just like the pharmacies, cash flow is obviously on their mind, and OTCs aren't where they make a ton of their profit margin. And you would want to think that, hey, common sense would prevail. And even if we say, well, we'll take it back 100%, they just have their, their processes, right? And they're going to apply that process no matter what. So it's strange because it's like a chicken or the egg. The stores aren't going to buy it if it's not there, and they're wanting already built-in demand. So even when I was a wholesale rep, it was challenging to get small products, even if they were great products, stocked into these warehouses, because you would ask, and they would say, "Well, what is the store going to buy a month?" And you'd say, "They'll buy 5 of something, okay?" But they didn't aggregate how many stores said that they would buy 5 of something, so it never hits the minimum order of what it takes to get it in. So, you know, when independent pharmacies get upset with vendors about going to chains to talk to them about partnerships, a lot of it's because of logistics and, not getting buy-in from the wholesaler, from enough independent pharmacies to really get a viable product stock.
It would seem that you have your work cut out for you, and congratulations on what you're setting up with them, because of the size of that, and because a lot of people don't want the 8 cases at first, it's like they're going from 8 cases. They're like, all right, well, we're not going to buy any, Chris. We're not going to get 8 cases in. Well, then you can't show the wholesaler you have any demand, because there might be a pent-up demand, but nobody got it because of the 8 cases. You know, you might have an easier time with toothpaste or something because you can prove you have a market set up and things like that. But I can imagine that would be hard with the type of product.
Yeah, and obviously we're still a mom and pop business, so we're not Abbott. We're not, you know, some of these Unilever, these big organizations that have a lot of clout with these wholesalers. So it's been a challenge, but I've had some amazing partners through the buying groups that have helped with endorsements. I've had some amazing people that have tried it, used it, saw the benefit. You know, their mom might have cancer, and I've been more than willing to send them some so they can see the benefits. And, you know, that's what really has been the main motivation, is knowing, hey, this has been discouraging at times. I've failed and been rejected a ton, but hearing the stories of how people are applying it and how it's really helping them has been what keeps me going and keeps our organization going.
If you could only spend your money one place on things that would kind of close a sale, what would that be? Is that going to be you with the handshake in the store? Is it going to be the trade show? What's going to close that sale usually?
It's definitely the relationship and the information, but really it's the sampling of the product. Yeah, this is a product that does what it says it's going to do. It works. So when we can get it in people's hands that either are going to influence, you know, store retail owners, or that are the retail owners that are going to influence the consumers, that's what we want to do. There's so many countless stories of wholesale representatives or pharmacies that I've sent, you know, cases to say, hey, just try this out yourself, give some samples out, and come back to me and let me know how it works and how you applied it. And just hearing the testimonials from those people, that's what's really driving our business right now.
Are those all people that you have met in person? You don't call someone up or just send something out of the blue to them, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't, because I was going to say that could be something you do, but are you meeting these people first?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, it's been me in that truck with those cases in the back with dad, you know, at the wheel. That's been a lot of how this has worked. And then, you know, from my time at McKesson and building those partnerships, knowing who the major players from a wholesale and the regional wholesalers and the buying groups, they're trying to find, you know, who those people are that really are going to help. And, you know, those folks aren't all created equal. Some of them have been amazing and really seen the value in this product and value in taking ideas and products to the stores. Others, you know, it's not a priority to them. So trying to filter through who are going to be advocates and in what areas. It's been a chess game to me of, you know, never a dull moment. You know, how am I going to get this on the West Coast? What organizations, what associations, you know, are going to help me get the exposure? So.
What kind of people bother you? Like you mentioned, like the wholesalers that won't touch it. What are some traits that you don't like in, let's say, a organization or a wholesaler when you're dealing with somebody? Is it a know-it-all? Is it a pessimist? What kind of people are like, I got to deal with that kind again?
Oh, I love that question. It's complacency and ego. And there's a lot of that out there, you know, from both a wholesaler and a store owner perspective.
I'm not going to rock the ship on my ego, so I'm not going to do anything? Or how do those two go together? Or do they?
No, I think that, you know, even though this is a challenging industry for the stores and for representatives that represent partners for the stores, some people can get complacent and they can, you know, do just enough to keep going, and they're not going to make changes, and they don't want to really be open and receptive. And they, you know, I've had plenty of people when I go in and or try to, you know, bring information to them from either a BioLite or industry perspective, have ego around that and not really be willing to listen. And, you know, it's free information. I always told my owners when I worked in the field, hey, listen to everybody. They're going to either give you what to do or what not to do. You know, be respectful and open. You don't have to partner with them, work with them, but who knows what you can gain from that conversation.
What I think you have going for you, Chris, is you're in Tennessee, right?
Right.
I think that a salesperson is going to be more successful from Tennessee. We deal with these wholesalers, these like pop-up wholesalers that call us, and it's always like a out east, like, I'm not going to pick on a state, but it's always like an out east, like mafia voice. You have a gentler tone from Tennessee than being one of these mafia guys. That's got to help. You've got that friendly vibe to you. And so what I'm saying is, I think the relationship's going better.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. It's been interesting.
Was that too derogatory?
No, I think it's dependent on your area, because I've been in the areas with pharmacies where my personality is slow to them.
Too slow.
Yeah. Someone told me this once, and it really resonated. They said, you know, down in the South, if you don't chit-chat and do some small talk, it's rude. up north, if you do small talk, it's rude because you're taking up their time.
You've wasted my time. That's interesting. I guess I'm Midwest, you know, that's why probably.
Yeah, it's just adapting your personality. And really, you know, I've been to all these areas and each region, each state has a different personality. And, you know, certain areas I really resonate with them. And other areas, I come to the car and my dad's like, hey, are you going to be okay? Do we need to stop today? And certain areas get certain vibes with me. And it's been fun kind of seeing the different cultures.
Do you speed up your cadence when you're out on the East Coast?
Oh, Mike, you don't understand. Walking through that door, I have to make snapshot judgments on first thing I'm doing when I'm walking through the door. I'm looking for what wholesaler this is so I can manage my pitch.
How do you tell?
Window signage, OTC labels, and totes. And then next, I'm kind of seeing what the workflow's like. Based on how I walk in the door, you know, within, you know, 10 seconds, I kind of know how I'm going to have to apply myself, how much time I have. And looking at the front end, you know, Bruce Nealon said this best to me. He said, a front end is either a bridge or a moat. If it's warm and receptive, you know, you're going back. And a lot of times it's going to be, you know, a professional partnership. If it's a moat, hey, you know, they're not really going to care much about that OTC sale. And
because of the look of it, even you can just tell if they have care to it and things like that.
Right. So there's so many pharmacies that, you know, are so diversified. They're doing so many things, offering so many products. And there's others that, you know, they feel like, hey, this isn't my focus. And the shelves are empty, a little dusty. I've seen it all, the good, the bad, the ugly, you know. So they know their market. But, you know, I would definitely think that you want to look professional in your store and you want to make sure that your consumer feels comfortable, because what you're doing is you're taking care of people in a very, you know, high responsible profession. So my two cents is you want to make sure that store has credibility.
I shouldn't be so proud of myself when I think I can pick out drug addicts, you know, or people coming in asking for, you know, cough syrup or whatever, you know, and they got like that. All of a sudden they're coughing because they come into your store, or when it's a fake prescription, they're talking too much and so on. Most pharmacists think they're good at that, but I always thought I was good at picking out toupees, but I don't think I am, because if it's a good toupee, no one comes up to you and say, I got you. I am wearing a toupee and you didn't figure it out. But I imagine when you walk into a store with your skill and your history, you can probably smell the attitude of that store in like 3 seconds, even if it's friendly or not.
Yes, definitely. You know, being in 2,500 of them over the course of my career, I think, you know, certain patterns develop. You know, there are times I need to check my ego and not judge a book by its cover. But for the most part, you know, how a store presents itself, you can see, hey, this is probably going to be a successful operation. Do you walk in? Do they have the essential oils and the soaps and that make the store that they're selling that makes the store smell good when you walk in the door? Or does it smell like mold? You know, there's plenty of stores I've been in that, you know, it smells moldy, and you just can kind of tell the vibe of what the store is all about from that presentation. And then you go back and it just how you're received a little bit. It's always been fun to try to really relate in a short period of time to these owners and the people that would be pushing this product.
Has HIPAA changed people's acceptance of you? I remember like in the old days, the reps would come in and kind of come back and you'd chit chat and, you know, you'd be working and they'd be talking to you. Have you noticed that? Are people less welcoming, or has that not been a thing?
No, I don't think that's necessarily been a thing. You know, I've always been respectful if customers come up trying to talk to the staff to, you know, make a walk away and let them have that private conversation. I would say that what has been a challenge, and I'm the guy that left a Fortune 5 company to go call on pharmacies during a pandemic that a lot of them had to close front ends. So early on when I transitioned, you know, COVID was still going. So trying to walk into stores that, you know, were masked up and about 20% of them still didn't have their front end open. So that would probably be the biggest thing is like, hey, man, why are you here? You're bothering me when we're dealing with this. And really how I justified that was this stuff really works for a lot of these conditions that we're dealing with right now. And I had pharmacies that were, at one time, we were giving away free case samples to people doing COVID testing so they could give people that had positive tests this to try. So, you know, we're trying to connect this not only with, you know, summer and heat, but different clinical applications like immunizations and COVID.
So, Chris, when you're on the road, how many nights are you on the road?
So usually I'll be on out a week and then back home a week. So I'm on probably about 50% of the time, and we'll just pick an area that maybe I don't have great relationships with a rep, or, hey, it's really hot down in Southeast Texas right now. They need this stuff.
Is that a decent pace for you? Or if you had your druthers, would you say, if I could be as successful, it'd be nice maybe to go 1 week a month? Or would you rather, is it exciting? You'd rather be gone every week kind of thing?
Well, I think my wife would like me to be home a little bit more to be helping her around the house. But then there's times she wants me to be on the road. So it's been fun, especially to have my father with me, you know, so I'm not alone. And I think that this is what it's taking to be successful as a mom and pop business. When we get a certain tipping point of exposure in the stores and the wholesalers really bought in, I'm hoping to not be traveling as much. But for right now, this is what it takes. And I'm going to do whatever it takes to help these stores and to help BioLite.
This show isn't just directed at independent pharmacies, but I know we have a lot of listeners of independent pharmacy. And that word, independent, is really quite important when we talk about independent pharmacy owners, because a lot of times, you know, we're stubborn independently, you know, we don't want to go along with this. And we all have our different ideas as far as the store is going to go. You know, we're not part of a franchise even kind of thing. So that word independent, for better or for worse, covers a lot of different topics as who we are.
Yeah, it's such an amazing opportunity to see the passion that independent owners have. You know, I think that they chose this profession for a reason. They chose to be business owners in this profession for a reason. They wanted to have the opportunity to take care of their community. And that passion is a positive thing. And it sometimes bleeds into stubbornness. I always kid around that, you know, the two things that will be left on this planet when the apocalypse happens are cockroaches and independent pharmacies, because they just are not going to be able to be stamped out. They got the grit that I just love. And it's been a blessing to be able to spend my career working with them and connecting with them.
If you wake up tomorrow and for some reason you have outgrown or you're not allowed to be in the medical field anymore, you cannot go be a drug sales rep, you can't work for BioLite, you're not able to do anything medical, what would your next career be?
I really enjoy archaeology and botany. So I would want to study plants. And I know that, you know, it's kind of a tangent off of the medical field, because so much medicine and true medicine came from plants. But, you know, my wife and I have a little garden, and our neighbors are microbiologists for the garden. So I just love, you know, horticulture and plants, and I love history and the different cultures. So I would love the opportunity to learn and study and teach in that field.
So to turn that into dollars, that would be teaching then.
Yeah, teaching and exploring and writing. You know, I taught marketing briefly in college, and I liked psychology, and I picked marketing because I felt like marketing is business psychology, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, as I've gotten older, seeing different cultures and civilizations and seeing how plants worked within those cultures was always fascinating to me.
Down at Purdue, we had a guy named Vero Tyler, and he was an old guy when I was there, but he was like some specialist, like in all the old plants. Yeah, psychology is interesting. When I attempted that in college, I never seemed to get too far, because my first semester class was psychology, and then the second semester was reverse psychology.
Yeah, that negates that a little bit. And I don't know, Mike, you got to be a little crazy to be fascinated by psychology. And that's what got me. I think I'm a little bit off. So
when I was a kid, people would talk about, oh, he went crazy. You know, he went off the deep end. He had a nervous breakdown and all this kind of stuff. And as I get older now, I realize that there's really no such thing. I mean, it's just a continuum. We're all crazy. Maybe if you throw in something like schizophrenia, you know, something, hearing voices, that might be like another level. But as far as everyday craziness, we're all there. And the definition really just jumps in if it's something that really has taken a hold of your life and you can't function. But outside of that, we're all crazy. And I think until you realize that in life and you can appreciate that in yourself and appreciate that in others, you don't really know what's going on yet.
If you show me a family or a relationship that isn't dysfunctional, I'll show you something that's pent up that's really going to get dysfunctional one day.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. Well, Chris, golly, nice meeting you.
Thank you, Mike. It's been such a fun time. I really enjoyed talking to folks in the industry and getting to know more people. So if any of your listeners want to talk shop or have any questions about BioLite, please reach out. I'll be glad to help any way I can.
Chris, thank you. Nice having you on, and I look forward to keeping in touch.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.